Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Have you ever heard such a superior know-it-all tone?
Yeah. Oh, you're serious?
From the packed Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons gone, you have permission to fire.
Have permission to fire, Tom. Weapons off.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about why the laws of gravity and morality, racism, a few other things, and isms as well. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. I have no idea. I so hate YouTube. So hate it. I absolutely hate YouTube. I don't know. I have no idea. It was working. Go to turn the camera on and it stops working. I have no idea. There were some things I wanted to talk about yesterday that I didn't get to. Maybe we'll get to those today. Maybe I'll get this thing restarted. Maybe I won't. I don't know. If you want to join me, area code 209-565-DAVE. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show, Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. God, why do I keep saying that? Hey, lo qui conizio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the appearance of knowledge. And now it's back on, so I don't know what to tell you. You can probably hear it in my voice today. I'm not at my 100% best. My annual spring cold has kicked in, and so I'm suffering with that, and it's going to take a bit to get through today, just from a trying to keep my voice working standpoint. It's working now. Hello, chat room. It is functional again. I'm going to pull my hair out. No, I can't get to the... I so hate YouTube. If I could work my will on this planet, I would take YouTube and squash it into my hands. I so hate YouTube. I so hate the idea that this entire society is so video-driven. You know, this is why we don't read books anymore. Because we have to have something visual in front of us. You want to know why ADD and ADHD and I'm assuming all the other DDDs and all that crap is so prevalent today. It has nothing to do with our society in the sense of what we're eating or what we're... You know, it has to do with the fact that we're so visually overwhelmed by everything that we can't use our own imagination. We can't read a book anymore because why would we read a book when we could watch the movie in 90 minutes? Why would we listen to a radio show on a podcast stream or something like that when we could watch the video of the ugly guy with the beard and the books behind him? It's insane. And we in the media side of this are so obsessed with it as well. Oh my God, it's gotta work. I so hate YouTube. So hate it. I absolutely hate it. I never really liked the video chat room we did when we were on the radio. I never really, you know, John used to hate it and he'd complain about it all the time. Oh, those people are terrible. It wasn't that the people would. I wish I could just do a chat room. Just a live freaking chat room. I don't want all this video crap. I don't want to see your pictures on there. I don't want to see any of that crap. I want to listen. I want to take an hour and just, you know, sit back and hear something. This is why I much prefer radio and podcast to television. The only thing I watch on television is baseball. And I actually prefer to listen to baseball on the radio. I cannot tell you how many times I'll have a game on. I'll have a game over here. But the sound you hear in my office is a radio broadcast of a baseball game somewhere. Maybe not one of the ones that I'm watching. Hate YouTube. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. So I'm assuming there's a chat room, but I can't get to it. So there you go. I don't know what to tell you. It's just frustrating. So yesterday, International Communism Day, which turned out to be pretty peaceful here in Seattle, in the Seattle area. It didn't. Oh, there it goes. So it's decided to play now. All right. So now I see the chat room. Hooray. God, what a pain in the... Sorry. This is so frustrating and so distracting from everything you're trying to do, you know? It's like, eh. Just need a microphone, a red light, and let's go. Let's go. Let's not fool around with all this crap. All this technology. I hate video. I mean, I like movies, and I even like an occasional television show, but I'm finding as I get older, I just really hate television. I really hate video. People send me videos on Facebook. Hey, Dave, watch this video. No, I don't want to watch your video. If your video is more than 10 seconds long, I don't care. I really don't. Oh, well. Anyway, yesterday, International Communism Day, celebrated rather peacefully here in the Seattle area. I was a little surprised by that. Not completely. The police in Seattle were pretty hard-nosed about some things. There were some counter-protests that were planned, but the police did not allow the two groups of protesters to merge. And so they weren't able to interface. And by interface, I mean they weren't able to throw Molotov cocktails and bricks at each other. So I guess that's good. Yippee. The rest of the world was pretty quiet about it. But one of the things I wanted to get into yesterday, and you sit down here and you've got this plan, this outline of stuff you're going to do on the show and, you know, what you're going to talk about. And then in the middle of it, something hits you and you go in a completely different direction than you thought you were going to go. It's normal. It happens in conversations. How many times have you been in a conversation with your wife or significant other and then she turns to you and says, now, what was I talking about before I got off on that tangent somewhere? I mean, and you got to go, I have no idea. I don't know. It happens. And one of the things I wanted to talk about yesterday was the idea of the Memorial Day, the International Victims of Communism Memorial Day. And the reason I wanted to get into that was because the 80 million plus, depending on whose estimate you go with, it's between 80 million and 100 million victims of communism just in the 20th century. That doesn't even include anything from 2000 to 2018, which we know that there are undoubtedly millions in there as well. But this idea that we need to commemorate the memory of the people who have been destroyed, killed, eliminated, whatever you want to call it, via communism is intriguing to me. And there's actually a website, Victims of Communism Day, and the idea that we're trying to memorialize them. And in the middle of the conversation where I was trying to go with this was this idea that we don't know anything about communism. And part of the reason we don't know anything about it is because nobody talks about the victims of communism. Nobody talks about the fact that these 80 million plus were essentially murdered on the basis of a political ideology that is crap, can't work, cannot work. Does not work, cannot work, has never worked. And I don't really care how many times you explain to me, well, we just didn't have the right people. We didn't have the right. It doesn't work. It cannot work. There is no perfect system. And unfortunately, communism and all the related socialisms and fascisms and nationalisms and those sorts of things tend to take the approach of what we used to call the missile technician approach. Just get a bigger hammer. If it's not working, we'll just force it to work. And that's what they did. They forced collectivism on farmers in the Ukraine and in China and essentially murdered people because they wouldn't go along with the ideology that was being forced upon them. Okay. I wanted to talk about that. And I wanted to contrast it with some other things. You know, we talked last week about the fact that, what is it, less than a third of American millennials know what the Holocaust was, when it was. They don't know anything about it. And there's a great deal of concern in the Jewish community right now about how do we keep this alive? How do we keep this memory, this important thing alive? Because if we don't, it'll happen again. If we don't continually remind people about it, if we don't continue to teach people about it, if they don't know the history of it, they'll forget it corporately. And if they corporately forget it, then what happens? The writing, the mentality changes, the attitudes change. We forget about something and we start down the same slippery slopes that led to that again. And so the idea here right now being tossed about is, you know, how do we reinvigorate the understanding of the Holocaust that is necessary because we need to make sure that it doesn't happen again? Well, the same question is asked with communism. Well, how do we reinvigorate this understanding of the fact that communism is dangerous to children and other living things. And the problems that are related to that are, of course, because communism, unlike Nazism or fascism, is not a dead ideology. Very few people today, although we're going to talk about one in a minute, there are very few people today who actively, honestly, legitimately consider themselves to be national socialists, fascists, whatever you want to call it. There are some, I get it, but they are a very, very, very tiny sliver of a percent. There are people who hate Jews. There are people who hate blacks. There are people who hate Asians. There are people who hate whites. There are people who hate browns. But their political ideology, while seemingly tied to that, is really not the basis of their driving force. Their driving force is their hatred of a group of other people. There are very few people who actually believe that nationalist socialism, as practiced by Nazi Germany in the 1930s, is a legitimate political ideology anymore. Nobody. In fact, where do you sit down with some of these people and talk to them? You'll find very quickly that they don't adhere to those ideologies at all. They just happen to hate fill-in-the-blank group. And this is the political ideology, the political party that most closely aligns with their hatred. Communism is not dead. Unlike National Socialism, communism and socialism in general are not dead ideologies. There are a significant number of people here in the United States who adhere to both ideologies. We have presidential candidates who will stand up and proudly say, I'm a socialist. Well, socialism, by definition, the end goal of socialism is communism. I didn't say it. Lenin did. You don't like it? Take it up with him. He's in the Kremlin. You can go see him. Communism is the end goal of socialism, and communism is dangerous to children and other living things. I think I'm going to put that on a T-shirt and print it, start selling those. It is. It's murdered 80 million people plus over the course of 120 years. It is horrible. I don't really care how high-minded its ideals are. National socialism was the same way. Fascism was the same way. Let's get the trains to run on time. Yeah, never did get that done, did they? And yet, what it ends up being is, as Mao called it, a hammer to kill people that disagree with it or resist it. And you can't You can't put that in the same category yet as the Holocaust because it's still an ideology that many people in this country, I don't know for a fact, but I bet I could walk around my town here, which is a pretty, you know, heavy military town, and I bet I could find 10, 15% of people who actually believe in socialism / communism as a valid political ideology. And as long as you have that many people, hell, all I gotta do is go 16 miles across the water to the east, and I'll find an entire city that believes that. I'll find an entire city government that, if it had its way, would run up the hammer and sickle as its city flag. As long as you have that existence, that ideology that is still alive, you're never going to convince people that it's something to be avoided, to be taught about, to be presented as something that cannot happen again. And while I certainly am one of those people who is, I would call myself a virulent anti-communist, while I'm one of those people who thinks that we need to memorialize those people and who've fallen, until we eliminate, stamp out, eradicate the ideas, the ideology of communism, it's going to be hard to set it up as a memorial to the fallen. Primarily because communists don't want you to talk about it, because, quite frankly, if they achieve what they want to achieve, it's going to happen again. Another 80-100 million hanging in the balance of what happens politically. I mean, you look at the city of Seattle, which is basically a socialist paradise at this point, he said jokingly. And you look at what's happening over there right now with people. Can you honestly say to me that, I mean, what they want to do is take money from the producers to spend to make everybody else equal? That's, you know, communism in a nutshell, right? They don't like the fact, and all over the news this morning is a continually running story about how the city of Renton, which is right next door to Seattle, is making it clear to businesses in Seattle that we don't have a business tax, and look, we got this brand new office park we're building, and we're not going to charge you to be here. We're not going to make you pay $75 million a year to provide homeless services. We're not going to do that. Come on over here. And the city of Seattle actually thinks that these people aren't going to move. They actually believe that these people are going to voluntarily stay there and go, yeah, we're going to pay all of our employees $75,000 a year, and we're going to kick in $75 million a year in taxes that we're not going to pass on to our customers to help the homeless. As long as those thought processes exist, you're going to have a hard time convincing anybody that communism is dangerous. And that's really the drawback. The problem comes in, and you're dealing with human nature. I mean, that's what it is. It's human nature. The idea of hate is so deeply ingrained in humans that it's hard to overcome it. Even people who say they don't hate anybody are lying. They hate somebody. They have a tremendous dislike for somebody. There's always somebody who's on their bad list. I like to think I'm a pretty, you know, easygoing guy. I like to think I'm pretty, you know, not racist. But even I find myself at times, not always, but at times, there are things that will pop into my brain, and I wonder to myself, where the hell did that come from? I mean, I know I hate to say this, but I'm acknowledging my feelings, but I'm questioning the basis of them. Went to a comedy show last week, told you about this, and found myself surprised at how much of the comedy was, and I use the term comedy pretty loosely here, race-based. And I found myself at one point not being sure, was I supposed to laugh? Is this joke just for those people, or is it for me people, or is it for all people? And that's not comedy. That's social commentary, which comedy can be, but usually it's a little more broad, if you get my idea. If I got to sit there and question whether or not I can laugh at a joke, it kind of kills the whole thing of it. But there are people who are so consumed now with hatred, so consumed with the concept of I have to hate something. And that something can even be inversely. It's not that I hate those people. It's that I hate that those people are doing this thing that belongs to me. Cultural appropriation, they call that. Can you imagine what would have happened back in the 40s and 50s and even into the 60s? Maybe even the 70s, I guess, now that I think about it. In the music world, had this concept of cultural appropriation been around? It is a well-known historical fact that rock and roll that I grew up with in the 60s and 70s was essentially white people's version of blues music being played by black musicians in the late 40s and early 50s. That we just stole it, turned it into rock and roll, and made it popular. No Motown, yeah. That's for damn sure. There wouldn't have been any of that. The world of music would have suffered. I mean, for all I know, we'd still be listening to Montavani. I don't know, but you know, think about this idea. I mean, music shifts and it goes here and then somebody else appropriates that. And folks, there's only 8 notes, right? No, is that right? Yeah. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. 7 notes. There's only 7 notes. So many octaves, you can put them in there. You got flats and sharps you can add in there, but there's only so many, there's only, you know, 7 chord structures. That's all there is. There's only so many beats you can do. And somehow or another, man, you appropriated my culture. I don't like that. Is it cultural appropriation when I go to eat Chinese food? I love Chinese food. Love Chinese food. In fact, I'm craving it right now. I love pizza. Am I appropriating Italian culture when I do that? But there are people who are so obsessed with hating other people that if I do that, I'm appropriating culture, and that's a reason to hate me. That's a reason to be mad at me. That's a reason to yell at me. That's a reason to point fingers at me and go, you're evil white guy. Don't think it happens? What's happening in Utah right now? So, you know, again, I have some experience with Utah. It's not my favorite place in the world, but, you know, I grew up there. I never went to my prom in Utah. There's a lot of reasons why, but, you know, mostly it was that I was I know this is hard to believe now. You look at me now and you go, Dave, how can that be? But in high school, I was kind of a geek. I was kind of a nerd. I wasn't very attractive. I wasn't any of those things. So, you know, it wasn't like high school girls were tripping over themselves to go, ooh, look at that guy. Plus, I wasn't LDS, so, you know. Anyway, in Utah, they had their proms this week, I guess, and some gal wore a Chinese-style dress to the prom. White gal. She's from Utah, of course. I mean, don't really have to explain that. A Utah teenager at a Utah high school wore a Chinese dress to her prom. And this has set off a firestorm, virtual firestorm of racism charges because she has appropriated the culture of the Chinese by wearing a prom dress that's Chinese. And you think to yourself, how are we ever going to get past hatred? How are we ever going to remember what happens Memorial when hate is what divides everything? And don't kid yourself. These ideologies, communism, Nazism, fascism, they require hate. Yeah, Chatroom says it was a cute dress. Just saying, it was a very cute dress. I don't want to think about it because she's, what, 17? So let's leave that out of this, okay? But yes, it is a very cute dress. If my wife was wearing that dress, I'd just be doing some cultural appropriation, let's say that. this hatred that defines these ideologies is deep rooted and still remains. It's still continuously there. It's still a part of what's going on. And whether that's in reverse, well, I don't like them doing that, or whether it's direct, I don't like you because, it's still the dividing point. It's still the point that's pulling things apart. It's still the thing that is keeping anything from going forward. And you can't memorialize something. You can't teach people the lesson of that until you get past that. And how do you get past it? That's the real question, isn't it? That's the real debate in all of this. How do you get past any of that, particularly when it comes to race? Particularly when it comes to people disliking each other, distrusting each other. I think part of it, and this is my own opinion, take it for what it's worth. I think part of it is understanding history and understanding, well, it's the point of view. It's the frame of reference. It's why do you feel that way? What when I say to somebody of a different race, a different color, why do you feel that way? It's the old question. Why don't Jews vote Republican? Well, some of us do on occasion. But if you ever stop to think about that question, you'd really understand why Jews don't trust Republicans. And it has nothing to do with your politics. Nothing to do with it at all. In fact, on the balance of the whole, most of your politics and most Democrats, they're pretty much the same. So it has to be something deeper. What is that something deeper? Do you ever think about that, Republicans? Why is it that Jews would distrust you? Why? You could probably ask the same question in reverse. I mean, you know, why do African Americans not vote Republican? Boy, I get that question all the time. We talked about this last summer about why this is. But until we get to why, until we start understanding why, we can't really get past the basic, the KT boundary line of you, as you were, of the original racism. Why am I being told I have to hate those people? What is it about those people that I have to hate them for? And when you're given an answer that sounds ridiculous, we need to question the answer. Mahmoud Abbas, you know who he is? Mahmoud Abbas is the Palestinian Authority president. Okay? That means he's in charge of the West Bank and Gaza. He's the president, and I'm doing the air quote thing here, of the Palestinians, what there is. He, this week, gave a speech in the West Bank town of Ramallah, in which he explained to his audience. Now, again, if someone tells you you have to hate someone, and we know Arabs hate Jews and Jews hate Arabs, so that's what we're told. We never stop to question why. Why do you hate this? Well, Mr. Abbas bothered. He explained that the Holocaust was caused by Jewish social behavior, such as money lending. Israel as a colonial project has nothing to do with the Jews. Europe wanted to send the Jews here to preserve their interests in the region. Called his speech a history lesson. Invoked an agreement whereby Adolf Hitler facilitated the migration of Jews to immigrants to Israel. So it must be okay. I mean, Adolf Hitler was for it, right? Their social behavior, their lending of money is what caused the Holocaust, according to a president of an internationally recognized organization that supposedly is a country today, that everybody wants to be. This is the guy that would be in charge of that. Nobody in his audience raised their hand and said, dude, wait, how does that even make sense? Are you telling me there's never been an Arab banker in the entire history of the world? Are you telling me there's never been a Russian banker in the entire history of the world, an Asian banker, an African banker? Is that what you're really telling me, that the only people that loan money in the entire world are Jews? Is that what you're telling me? Nobody challenged him. And if nobody will challenge them, then how do we ever knock that wall down? How do we ever cause these people to go, yeah, I'm probably wrong. Well, there's another can. Nobody ever wants to admit they're wrong. Nobody ever wants to do that. And we always have an excuse for why we can do things. In 1933, on this day, the Catholic men's organization in Germany announced that it was okay to be both Catholic, Roman Catholic, and a member of the Nazi Party. Two organizations with diametrically opposed ideologies headed in two different directions. But if you're German, you can be both. You can compromise your position without really endangering your immortal soul. Yay! Because as a Catholic, I guess they had plenty of years and plenty of centuries of, you know, torturing Jews anyway. So how is that any different from what the Nazis are doing right now? It's sad. And we all go through these moral convolutions to make ourselves, to make our ideology acceptable. And there you have it. You got stuff happening like, well, I mean, you got the Chinese dress. That's crazy. You got this guy in California. I'm not sure I believe this, but according to what I'm reading, the number two guy in the poll. Now, remember, California is a top two primary. So the top two people, regardless of party, move on. I'm being told that Kevin De Leon is no longer in second place. Again, I don't know if I believe that or not. I just sort of assume that Feinstein and De Leon are going to face off in an all-Democrat final election. But I'm being told that at least for the moment, the number two guy is a guy by the name of Patrick Little and is a Republican with 18%. Dianne Feinstein with 32%. And of course, the concern is that if he could get, you know, 19-20% and De Leon comes in at 18%, whatever splits the Democrat vote, then this is the Republican candidate for Senate of the United States. And the Republican Party has allowed this guy to run on its ticket. Patrick Little, the guy running as a Republican for the Senate of the United States, is a white supremacist. Again, that's not me saying that. That's not an accusation. That's not me saying, I think that guy's a bad guy. That's him. He says it. He is complaining on his media that the Daily Stormer, a national socialist white supremacist website, isn't giving him enough backing for his campaign to Senate of the United States so he can eliminate Jews and blacks from the state of California and the rest of the United States. And rather than the Republican Party standing up and going, dude, you ain't running on our ticket. This is the leading Republican on the ticket. And as long as this continues to happen, Democrats love this, by the way, but Democrats are ecstatic about the fact that a known, admitted, loud white supremacist is the leading Republican on the ticket. They love that. And believe me, they are actually, I know they say they're scared of it, but the left is hoping that he is. They really hope that he is the nominee. They're praying for that. The hay they would make with that is just incredible. And the Republican Party seems powerless to stand up and say, no, no, no. They don't even have a Neil Kashkari type to come in and run on his own just to beat the guy, just to keep him from being the nominee like they did before. This hatred that this guy has is inexplicable to me. It really is. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Because there's no way he believes that as a political ideology. He believes that as a personal hatred. But how can someone who can swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States running for an office that does that then turn around and say, well, I hate Jews and I hate blacks, and be taken in any way, shape, or form legitimately by 18% of the freaking population of Republicans in California? You're never going to have a Memorial Day for the victims of socialism, communism, until you can get past that, because there are still people who believe it. There's still people that operate that way. Still people that think that that's okay. Way past time. It's the Dave Bowman Show right here on Power, on the Power Talk. Where the hell am I getting this from? I told you I'm sick. Right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Stay with us. Back after a break.
It started off as a normal day. I felt fine when I arrived at the plant.
Ruth Junius's life was about to change.
Then I dropped my keys. They kept slipping out of my hand. My arm felt numb. A coworker asked me if I was okay, and I couldn't speak. I started to get scared.
Ruth was having a stroke. People around her weren't sure what to do.
They thought I should go home or lie down, but I knew something was very wrong. I wrote 911 on a piece of paper with my other hand, and someone called for me.
Because everyone acted quickly, doctors at the hospital were able to give Ruth treatment that started to reverse the symptoms.
Within a few minutes, I was talking again. I didn't know a thing about stroke before I had one. Now I make sure that my friends and family know all the signs of stroke so they'll get help fast if they need it.
No stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. Call 1-800-352-9424 for more information. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
1 in 3 adults in America have prediabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben Has Mom Ma. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
It's called the Gong Herd Round the World.
You are a grand narrative just waiting to be written. You are the ultimate conduit of life's rhythm. You deserve the very best vision and the very best version of yourself. And we're here to bring it out of you. I truly am fired up today to be driving your bandwagon, to be your biggest fan, to be avidly you, your secret weapon in the war against your sense of self. You don't have to tell anyone we hang out. Well, I love the idea of being your partner in crime, a tag team of two in unleashing your legendary, to optimize your outlook, to back the very best parts of you. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, to do whatever it takes to bring your own bold.
All Natural Being with Brian Brody here on IPMNation.com.
Hey, this is Whitey from the Hail Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's me, Dave. Not feeling very well today. I'm just really not. You can hear it in my voice, and I'm ranting too, so that's part of it. Buster was asking me about, how do you know it's not allergy? Do you know it's not allergy? What did he say? Did you know they were cold when you lived in the valley, or did you just have the allergies? No, allergies... They're different. And allergies get me in two ways. They make me sneeze, which I can deal with. The sneezing doesn't bother me that much, but man, do they here especially, but in the valley as well, it would go after my eyes and my eyes. And I'm very protective of my eyes already. I have major eye problems can barely see right now as it is. In fact, I have a 27-inch monitor in front of me because I can't see a regular computer monitor anymore. It's like, I mean, yeah, part of it's my glasses. Part of it's I need to go to bifocals and yada, yada, yada. But I'm very protective of my eyes. I have a long-term, long-standing eye issue that I've had since I was in the service with regards to a sort of bacteriological, I think it's bacteriological infection of my eyes. And it's it was so rare that they used me for training at Portsmouth Naval Hospital. They had me in the seat and in the chair, and they were getting ready to treat me. And they paraded the entire ophthalmological unit through there to see this because they'd never actually seen it before. They'd heard of it. They took a bunch of photographs of it. And at the end of the day, if you ever go to Portsmouth Naval Hospital and you're going through their training system for this particular eye disease, all the photos you see are probably of me. Anyway, point being, I'm very protective of my eyes, and that's so when pollen and whatever it is we have in our backyard, tree or whatever, that is like death. I mean, I opened my window one morning, and God bless America, the next thing I knew, I felt like clawing my eyes out. A little bit of Benadryl, a little bit of Zyrtec, and a couple of weeks to get the pollen out, And you'd think up here it wouldn't be that big of a problem because of the rain, right? Like, all the rain does is just move it around. It's weird. When I was in Virginia, you'd have cars painted yellow like they are here with the pollen, yellow-green, and it never bothered me. But here, man, and in Georgia was really bad. California wasn't as bad, the Central Valley. Whatever it is here, man, it gets in my eyes and it's like... Speaking of Maxine Waters in the news again, everybody's favorite congressperson, who, by the way, has a fake Twitter account, which is far funnier than her real Twitter account. I'm not sure who runs it. You got to be very cautious when you see tweets from Maxine Waters. Somebody posts it on your social media. You got to be really careful because they sound like things that she would actually say, but they're not. They're fake. But in a real news story this week, she got into it with Kanye West. Again, not a Kanye West guy. I'm not interested in people who are famous just because they're famous. And as far as I'm concerned, he's just a Kardashian. And be that as, you know, whatever it is. And I didn't realize he has his own music career and all of that, but is not one, you know, it's not something that's on my iPod. I can tell you that. Do they say iPod anymore? It's not on my streaming music service anymore. Anyway, I guess, and this is one of the things I got into a conversation last week about people on the conservative side of things, the right-hand side of things. We get excited when people who are obviously on the left say things we agree with. Oh, did you hear so-and-so said something that we like? And so we're all like, yay! And all of a sudden we like that person and we go out and we buy whatever it is that they're selling. And they didn't really mean it. They just were saying something. And even if they do mean it, they're going to walk it back as soon as they, was it Taylor Swift? No, it was, who was it? The Canadian singer gal that said that she would have voted for Trump. And all of a sudden, and she had to walk it back. She's Canadian. She can't even vote in our elections. Who the hell cares who she would vote for? I don't care who you would vote for, to be honest with you. I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but I just don't care. Anyway, I guess Kanye had said something to the effect that, you know, Trump was doing the best he could, and even Donald Trump retweeted his tweet, and all of a sudden conservatives were out buying Yeezus records and loving on the Kardashians, which makes no sense to me. Well, Maxine Waters got involved, and then he went on to say some other comments that he's already had to walk back and on about slavery, and doesn't really matter. But Maxine Waters was asked this week about Kanye West's comments about the hegemony of, is it hegemony or hegemony? I can never remember if it's a hard G or not. Pat, you're in the chat room. Is it hard G or soft G? I think it's hegemony, right? At any rate, the iron lock hold that the Democrat Party has on black voters. And so I guess he criticized that. Maxine Waters was was asked about it. She said, Kanye West is a very creative young man, but we also think that sometimes West talks out of turn, and perhaps he needs some assistance in helping him out to formulate some of his thoughts. We, she's using the royal pronoun, we don't think that he actually means to do harm, but we're not sure that he really understands the impact of what he's saying at a time that he's saying it, and how that weighs on particularly the African-American community and for young people in general. Yeah, I thought it was soft, too. Hegemony. I understand he's getting pushback from a lot of young people on the internet, but we are hopeful that his creativity will continue to be demonstrated in his work, and I think maybe he should think twice about politics and maybe not have so much to say. That is a congresswoman in the United States Congress talking about a singer talking about Trump. This is the point we've reached in our world today. This is the news, folks. If it isn't some guy sewing heroin into puppies, it's a congresswoman telling a rap artist to S-T-U-F. No, S-T-F-U. Sorry. This is where we've reached. And doing so in the third person of herself. We don't think that he's thinking very well. We wish he would be quiet. We, meaning me, wish that he would just, you know, let us help him learn to think better, which is exactly the problem in the first place, right? Nobody's thinking for themselves anyway. You have this group this group identity that says, here's how you should think. And if you get outside of that box, we're going to bitch slap you on Twitter. Wow. It's just bizarre to me. And again, I don't have any particular axe to burn with Kanye. He's not my cup of tea. I know this will surprise you, maybe, but before you start sending me the emails going, got several Drake albums on my phone, my iPod. You know, believe me, I got a lot of Sam Cooke. I got a lot of 70s funk music. It doesn't have anything to do with race. It has to do with what I like, what I can actually freaking understand. It's, yeah, the bitch slap is usually a backhand. It's true. Sorry. I swear to God, YouTube, okay, this is completely aside here. YouTube made me approve that comment in the chat room. The bitch slap is usually backhand. It made me approve that comment because YouTube, I guess, is offended by it. This is a chat room that doesn't allow, this is a PG-13. It doesn't allow under 13 in it anyway. And it made me approve that. I don't know why I find that funny. I'm almost tempted to just drop a series of F-bombs just to see if it does anything, but it won't. Who cares? I don't know why I find that so bizarre that Maxine Waters. I find it more bizarre that she refers to herself in the third person. And that she wants to control how Kanye West thinks when he's not making music. And when he's making music, he can say whatever he wants. Which, you know, boy, there's a show there, isn't it? Talking about the language of music these days. But if he gets outside of that, if he wants to talk about politics, well, no. We need to correct his thinking. Because, by God, we're not going to have that, are we? Not going to allow that. We're not going to, you know, understand. We're not going to whatever. It's just, I don't know. I find her bizarre anyway. I just, you know, at some point you realize that people are resisting the temptation to quote seven words. Yes, I am. All right, for those of you that are young enough, no. There used to be seven words that you couldn't say on television or radio. Seven. And then that kind of went, you can actually say most of those seven words, at least on radio, but you have to do it in what's called safe harbor, which is overnight when little people, young people, probably aren't listening. And even then, it's kind of a, you can do it, but your boss is going to say, don't. And there you go. And I have no idea about television. I don't know what they can do on television anymore. I see commercials for a show on TBS starring another rap artist, Snoop Dogg, some of whom I like. Some of his music I find very good. Some of it I just find outrageously bizarre. But the commercial has him throwing up pictures of three guys and saying, what do these guys have in common? And then the contestant says, well, they're all dicks. They're all named Dick. And then they go, then Snoop Dogg says, well, I didn't know you could say dick on TV. And that's the commercial. That's the hook. That's the, hey, come watch my show. And you didn't used to be able to say that kind of stuff. Anyway. Maxine Waters wants to control how people think. I do also like, I mean. Hey, the magnetic poles are going to flip. Did you know this? So this was supposed to happen, was it last week when the Earth was going to end? Was that April 24th, 25th, 26th, somewhere in there? So planet Nibiru was going to pass through the solar system. This was going to set off earthquakes and presumably volcanoes. Jesus was supposed to come back and the magnetic poles were going to flip. So what is now north would go to south and what's south would go to north. And this was supposed to scare us. And even today, when Jesus didn't come back last week and Nibiru didn't show up and planet X didn't show up and the Bible once again turned out to be misinterpreted. What a shock there, huh? When all of that didn't happen, the people who were making the predictions kind of disappeared. They went quiet. But the magnetic pole people are still going bananas. So the magnetic pole's going to flip. The magnetic pole's going to flip. The pole's going to flip. The pole's going to flip. Almost at 60 cycles, which would be, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah. Ironic. At any rate, the poles are going to flip, folks. Do you know how many times they flipped in the history of the planet? It's just the first. Obviously, the flip didn't happen because the Earth is flat. Oh, you missed yesterday's show. Don't get me started on flat earthers. Anyway, the poles are going to flip. They flipped many times in the past. This is nothing unusual, nor is it unnatural. It happens. The only difference is that can a poles flip on a flat earth? Stop! Stop with the flat earth stuff, chat room. Stop! It's no wonder John hated you people. What was I saying? I think that's where I came in on the conversation, isn't it? Anyway, the poles have flipped so many times. The difference is that now we have all this modern technology. And we think that if the poles flip, somehow or another, everything's just going to stop and we're all going to become stupid Neanderthals again. This is the part that I've never figured out about these doomsday scenarios. Stop it, chat room, stop. There's always this presumption. Okay, 2012, global warming, the world is frozen. And somehow or another, we all become stupid. Somehow or another, we just all forget everything we've ever known. I hate to do this, but there's a Star Trek episode like this, right? Where Kirk goes, it's a beautiful planet and it's got the natives living there. And one of them's really cute. And he goes down into the little temple thing and it goes and it zaps his brain and he forgets everything and disaster's coming. So he can't solve the disaster because his brain's gone and he doesn't remember anything. And he gets married to the princess and he does CPR on a kid. Anyway, the whole point being that that's not going to happen to us. We're not going to become stupid. We're not going to forget. We have all these books. Even if you wiped out every Kindle and every cloud storage in the planet, we'd still have billions of books. We'd still have the knowledge that we already gained. It's not going to just go away. I'm not convinced that a pole flip is going to do all that much damage anyway. I'm just not convinced of that. I'm sorry. I understand a little bit about how electronics things work. And I know that, you know, if poles didn't flip back and forth really fast, like 60 cycles or 400 cycles, your computer wouldn't work anyway. Imagine the fortune to be made in backwards compass sales. How many people can read a compass anyway? How many people understand compass deflection? What do you mean my What do you mean my compass isn't pointing true north? What does that mean? I don't get it. Anyway, the poles are going to flip because it does happen. So if you need something to panic about today and you're not a Dodger fan worried about Corey Seager's Tommy John surgery, there you go. The poles are going to flip. It's not going to happen today. It's probably not going to happen anytime in your lifetime. It's probably not going to happen anytime before human beings are dead and gone on this planet. But it's worth getting upset about. It's worth getting hyper about. It's worth being, you know, a little bit scrunched up about, I guess. Because otherwise you wouldn't have anything to do it. Deflection was what he was supposed to be. Yeah, I was talking about compass deflection, not the deflection of the major. Oh, for the love of Star Trek. It gets in there. Well, I made it through. I'm not sure how I did. My voice is just about gone, and I've only drank half my cup of coffee. That's weird. It's still warm, though. It's good. I got a lot of other things to get on to today. Hope your day is picking up and getting on with it. I appreciate you being here, being a part of it. Remember, you can always get me, area code 209-565-DAVE. That is for texts and voicemail, 565-3283. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, I'm on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. And we even have a website, plausiblylive.com and podcast99.org. All right, take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. I already did my dishes today, Buster, so you enjoy yours. Have a wonderful day, everybody. And we will see you tomorrow for a Constitution Thursday episode, unless my voice just completely gives out, in which case we'll do it on Friday. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Oh, stay tuned. This Week in U.S. Politics is next with Jay right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Welcome to the coming apocalypse.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.